The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 2nd of June, 2020. On the podcast today, Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Extract Resources, XTR's ticker there, and Colin talks about the acquisition of Bush Ranger Copper Gold Project located in the Lachlan Fold Belt in New South Wales, Australia. Also on the podcast, Charles Bray, Executive Chairman of Eastinco Mining and Exploration. And Charles provides a general operational and financial update. Plus, Glenn Goodman, former ITV News business correspondent and now the author of The Crypto Trader, explains why he's gone long Bitcoin. He's quite excited. He thinks it's a breakout. And we chat about that. Plus, as always, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see both these lists, top 10 versions of these lists, at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you can also see our COVID-19 index. At the moment, top of that index rises Your Gene Health. It's up 6.3%. The biggest faller is Novacyt. News out today, they're down 9% to 305. And those are 28 companies, the COVID-19 index, 28 companies, basically, that are well-placed to trade strongly through this coronavirus pandemic. And maybe they're coming up with a cure via a vaccine, or they're producing tests, or basically they just benefit in the change of trend that the lockdown has brought. So check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Tired of using different sites to research companies? Vox Markets aggregates key financial details, pricing data, and company news into one place. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Extract Resources. XTR is the ticker there. Colin, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
And you reached a bit of news, quite surprising, really. And we'll dig into this. It's it adds to your copper story. You are a copper bull, as you know, but it adds to your story. You've acquired a sort of a company that has a copper gold project in a good area in New South Wales. We'll dig into that in a bit. Before we do, as always, Colin, you've got a lot going on there at Extract. Just summarise the bits of the business, please, if you could.
Well, Extract Resources, of course, is the key project, or the first project, is Manica. That's a gold project in Mozambique. That's producing surplus of income over expenditure, i.e. cash flow, on the alluvials. And we've got a hard rock project being developed just as soon as we can ship the materials up from South Africa. Obviously, there's a blockade on the border. So that's going well. The tailings dam are being constructed. We're also looking at that particular place to do where the gold is free milling, to actually introduce some other companies as well to go for free milling gold and another concession nearby, more alluvial. So I'm hoping to lift the cash flow quite dramatically. But we, as you know, we've moved into Zambia. We've got the Eureka copper exploration. That produced some really nice results, attracted trade interest. And we're about to embark upon another drilling program. We modeled all of this, and that showed good potential. And we've got the Kalengwa dumps, particularly a 2 million tailings dump with 1% copper. Pretty homogeneous, and we took 93 samples, and the uniformity was absolutely terrific. And then, of course, we've got this new acquisition. So we're a company, I guess, that it's got two legs. It's got cash flow coming from Manica Gold, together with some exploration. It's got exploration in copper in Zambia. It's got production in Zambia, which will come from the Kalengwa copper. And this new acquisition, which is quite a large exploration project in Australia.
Yeah.
Well, so that's a thumbnail sketch of the company.
Yeah, exactly. Well, just the title here, you announced yesterday an agreement to acquire Prospect Ore, currently own the Bush Ranger Copper Gold Project located in Lachlan Fold Belt in New South Wales, which is Australia's world-class copper gold province. So this is a bit of a change for you, because normally you focus on Africa. And so why have you moved to Australia? What's the deal there? What's made you change your mind here? Or change your focus there?
No, that's that. That's a good question. And, you know, that, I guess that was the not the biggest part of the deliberation, because the assets, the thing that drives you not where it is. And then, you know, there's not too many mines on Regent Street, for example. But, you know, when I came across this, I am opportunistic, but I'm also extremely careful with shareholders' money and always trying to add value when you make acquisitions. I think it was 16-17% dilution with this acquisition, so it had to be carefully thought through. But, you know, when you look at 350,000 tons of contained copper, which is JORC assessed, that's a serious start to our life. When you look at 200 kilometres west of Sydney, tarred road access, power, water, everything you need, that's pretty important too. When you're looking at transparency and mining codes, that's pretty important. But, you know, those things are all overcome. But we didn't have to overcome them. This is a porphyry. I saw some comment on the bulletin boards that the gold was ridiculously low. I think if one delves into the announcement, you will see that at 159 meters, the gold was up in the 0.5s, 0.6s, 0.7s, and then the copper came down a bit, but the actual copper equivalent was quite high. So we're looking at, as we get deeper, into a very, very true copper-gold porphyry with gold grading up as one gets deeper. And let's face it, 159 meters, we've still got a long way to go with your average porphyry. So it's open-ended, Justin.
Yeah.
It's open-ended to depth. It's got some strike extension. And, you know, what brought me there, you know, this coronavirus sitting at home, you know, one's had the opportunity to read and search a lot more than one might have had before. Mm. And I guess that drew me to it casually. And then I started going into recent acquisitions, recent discoveries, recent IPOs. That district is basically, there's a huge renaissance there. It's coming back out of the ashes. It's not as though it was ever in the ashes, you know. Every single prospect around us was a mine or is a mine. Mm-hmm. So again, it's not a virgin area where you just do exploration and it turns out to nothing. But, you know, of late, there's a company got floated on the in Australia on the gold prospectivity. We're very close to that. They recorded 27 meters, I think, at 4.5 grams gold. And so around the margins of these porphyries, you get the epithermal gold systems, which are close to surface, open pittable. And, you know, Justin, start getting golds of gold grades of 4 grams. That's serious stuff, open pittable. Anywhere in the world. So we've got those to look at. We've got the other Anglo license, as they refer to them, which are this epithermal system and a porphyry. And we've got our own porphyry, which is open-ended, which we can drill in the short term, which we will drill in the short term. And, you know, not very far away from us, a company recorded, I think it was 1,270 meters, 0.6 copper equivalent. I remember the days, and I'm sure you do, of Sol Gold. Mm-hmm. When those sort of results came out, people thought, crikey, the drill system goes on forever.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm seeing in this district. Not too many people talk about 1,270 meters of continual mineralization, Justin. And, you know, we're not that far away. We're in the same structure. We've got the porphyries. We've got the porphyry, the key porphyry. And I'm very, very bullish. And the acquisition cost, when you think about it, per pound of copper, per ton of copper, whatever, whichever way you want to look at it, is a fraction of what the companies are paying. So open-ended, highly not prospective, there'll be past prospectivity. The opportunity to make it bigger is very good indeed. And in a very favorable jurisdiction with very good infrastructure. So as I say, not too many mines on Regent Street. And if you believe as passionately as I do in copper, then you've got to go for the better deposits. You've got to go for value, and you've got to go to the situation where you can really enhance shareholder value. And I know, I instinctively know the markets ask the same question that you've asked. Why is he going to Australia? But then again, I throw the question back. Show me anywhere other than the Congo, maybe, where you know, you can get systems as big as this, which have got proven resources already, and are ready for further drilling to make them bigger. So we as a board at Extract, we're delighted with the acquisition, and we think we can do a lot for our shareholders with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And as you said there, so short term, some drilling. What's the plan of attack here next sort of 3-6 months?
Get into it. That's the attack, Justin. It's there. It's ready. You drill it. And you know the drilling cost. The diamond drilling cost in Australia quite favourable. Quite favourable. You know, there's been a bit of a downturn in the world for the last 2 or 3 years. So drilling costs are favourable. So there's no shortcut. When you've got a prospect like this, you get stuck in there, Justin. And so drill, drill, drill. That's the idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Okay, cool. And is this your new favourite? What do you know? Are you prioritising projects here, or are you shuffling them around, or what's happening?
You're basically a pretty ineffective CEO, in my opinion, if you're not actually ranking the projects in your company all the time and going through re-rating exercises. But let's step back and look at Extract. The hard rock gold, it's going to happen. It's not happened as fast as any of us wanted. And we've been sidewinded by this this virus. But that's in hand, that's in control. Mm-hmm. Eureka, we like it. The trade likes it. Won't cost a fortune to add value to it. And the latest modeling has been very revealing because we put all past history in there. And now we know that the ore body bifurcates to the north, a body shoots off to the west. It's steeply dipping. And we can align our modeling to geophysical and geochemical anomalies. And we're already trenching. So that one, it's in its place. It's in its box. It's got a plan. The Kalengwa dumps, and we've done all our test work there, and we know the way to optimize for the company and its shareholders the best way forward. And adding this to the stable, I think, is, you know, we use the word world-class deposit, and that world-class deposit is used a bit more loosely probably than it should be, but that is a world-class deposit. So I think, you know, if you actually step off our portfolio, the production is going to help us a lot when it starts. And we've got, as I said, we've interim measures to get into the free milling stuff, interim measures to do more alluvials. So that's going to look after itself. We're well established there. The next thing is the platform, I think, for this company now will take ourselves to over 1 million tonnes of copper in that Queensland, in the Bushranger project. Once you get over that magical million, that's the place to be. But, of course, if you look at the press release, Anglo American have got a backing rights there, 80% backing rights. So it's not as though we've got to go scurrying around the marketplace trying to attract attention. This is defined, it's got its goals, it's got its targets. So I think the Manika is going to look after herself, provide us with good cash flow. Bushranger is going to give the shareholders and the market the excitement of further value add by adding more tons of copper to our portfolio. Eureka is going to come and is going to give us more value, and of course we'll be bringing in Kalengwa. So when you look at our market cap, you look at our place in society, the place where we sit. A pretty attractive proposition, Justin, all round is Extract now. But yes, focus, I think, expenditure will be definitely directed towards getting more tons of copper, because this world is going to need that copper next year and the year after and years after that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, Colin, you know, summarise it, 3 bullet points then for people liking the sound of this, not yet following the story though. Bulleted up with 3 points. Why someone should add you to their watch list, please?
Okay, well, it's in the right metals, copper and gold. Mm-hmm. It has diversity of production and exploration. And it's just acquired a world-class asset, which is open-ended and can only add value to the company. And then, of course, just put a circle around that and say that it's very nicely priced and in the right places at the right time.
Marvellous
and
stuff.
I don't think I could put it any better than that, really.
Excellent stuff, Colin. Good to chat to you as always, and hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Justin. Thanks a lot. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Charles Bray, Executive Chairman of Eastinco Mining and Exploration. EM.P is ticker. Charles, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me again.
Now, it's funny, I talk to companies all around the world, and you know, every company has one thing in common at the moment, is how they're dealing or their country's dealing with COVID-19. So it'd be nice to get your update on it. Before we get into that and what's happening with you, first of all, for people not familiar with Eastinco, could you just explain what it's all about, please, Charles?
Yes, we are a London-listed natural resource investor. So we have invested into a Rwandan tantalum mining company. The company also mines tin and tungsten to a lesser extent. We have one mine site we are operating at present, and it's called Kwaka. And we have two other sites we are with pending licenses. We have taken an artisanal mine, we have mechanized it, and brought along a lot of beautiful yellow equipment. And shortly, we hope to turn that on once COVID drops to have a lovely cash flow positive producing mining operation.
Excellent stuff. Now, when people hear Rwanda, they think about the hark back to the time of the Civil War.
Yeah.
I was reading an article recently on Rwanda. I was surprised, because of that war, how now forward-thinking the government is, and there's a lot of females involved, and education is at the forefront. So it's flipped, really, hasn't it?
That's very much the case. I think that as a result of the Civil War, you had a once it was resolved, of course, you had a large number of NGOs, a large number of government, pseudo-government or pseudo-government agencies and groups coming together into the country to assist with its redevelopment. And as a result, it cultivated this very cosmopolitan sort of setting. Not to mention that the existing Kagame government has been very supportive of seeking outside investment. And working very closely with groups from all over the region and the world to promote an environment that was very friendly, to especially to business. Mm. So we're very happy to be there. And we find that in terms of the infrastructure, in terms of the natural beauty, in terms of every aspect, that it's a very, very good place, a very safe and happy place to be.
Yeah. And so take us through at the moment, you know, the macro environment as far as COVID is concerned. What's happening there?
Well, Rwanda, again, has been very responsive. They've taken the view that getting a good grip on the virus initially and not allowing it to permeate the society would ultimately have some short-term costs, but some very, very good long-term benefit. And so the country has effectively put on a lockdown. It's eased it most recently, but we still have issues with respect to trans-regional travel. But that is as well allowed it to only have a few hundred cases. There was one death in the country this entire time, and that was a result of somebody who caught the virus abroad and decided to return home for treatment. So COVID is very, very much under control in country, and we're happy to see that. And it's now about making sure that the country can start to interact and do business with itself while protecting it from, let's say, infection from outside. And slowly we're going to start to see the country open up and get back to normal.
Yeah, well, I was looking at that. So you said one death. I was looking on that website, and I was seeing one death, 377 cases, that's all. I thought, is that right? And then you mentioned it. I thought, wow. So,
yeah.
So it's been taken very seriously, and it's working. So as far as you're concerned, Have you any idea when you can get back to doing what you want to do?
Yeah, we're anticipating that we'll see a reduction in the restrictions on that regional travel in approximately 3 to 4 weeks. Okay. In the meantime, we're focused on completing. We've been working on a wash plan, and we're now a few months late. But we are at that point where we're literally tightening the bolts and adjusting things here and there, building some wash tanks. So we're really just taking care of the final elements so that we're prepared. And in that time, when it does open up, we can start to produce and actually sell our product. Yeah. We're saying 3 to 4 weeks.
Okay, good. As far as, you know, capital is concerned, this is a lot of companies just shutting down, and of course, having a strong balance sheet is essential, really, just to survive this. What's your balance sheet like at the moment?
Yeah, well, our view, we took some months ago the view that we had to be able to persevere through this for a number of reasons. One was that our competition is primarily artisanal miners in country who've produced over the years 60 to 70% of all mining production. With those guys effectively not working, it leaves, you know, a few mechanized mining companies to compete with. And so the landscape is really wide open for us. We have the opportunity to pick up some greenfield sites, but as well to expand our existing operations, the mechanized operations at Quaka, and to launch new ones at a site in the south. And so we decided to effectively reduce the operational cost of the company, and that primarily was related to payroll. So we got that down to zero. And we focused on raising capital. So we asked existing shareholders to exercise or convert their warrants, a portion of their warrants. The reception to that has been excellent. We couldn't be happier. And as a result, we've now, let's say, topped up the coffers and have an excess of 600,000 pounds of cash just sitting there to allow us to be flexible and to take advantage of any opportunities that come, but most importantly, to stay alive. We're prepared.
And so if everything goes to plan now, say, over the next sort of 3 months, what's the next sort of big milestone you're hoping to achieve? And where do you be, say, this time next year, maybe?
Yeah, we're hoping in the next major milestone, let's be very, very clear about this, is to go cash flow positive. We just are looking to turn on the operations and to start to sell the product. We believe that we have a relatively low operating expense, or we have some very, very high potential output at the Quaka site based on our geological surveying. So we're expecting to go cash flow positive. We'd love to be able to talk to clients, shareholders at the end of this year and explain how we're a profitable business producing multiple tons of tantalum. And from there, we will look to grow it. And as I said before, the opportunity is very, very good for us to grow this business in country.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Okay, well, if someone likes the sound of this, then, Charles, but are not yet following the story, as always, if you could, three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list.
Number one, we've transformed. We've gone from an artisanal mining group to now a mechanized mining group that can process 20, 25 tons per hour of ore. That's number one. Number two, I think we are emerging. So it's more than just transforming and becoming mechanized and the ability to do large numbers, but we're now able to go in country in Rwanda and find other sites and apply to work on them. And so from that standpoint, there's a growth element with new opportunities to be had. And then finally, as this most recent exercise has shown, we have a tremendous shareholding base. It's good, it's strong. The shareholders have been very active and communicative, and we invite that and appreciate it very much. And we're in alignment, and we're going to work together to get this this business successful and growing.
Excellent stuff. Charles, good to chat to you, and hopefully
likewise,
we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks a lot.
Yes, thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Glenn Goodman. The crypto trader is the name of the book, and recent weeks we haven't really chatted crypto that much, to be honest. It's been more the markets, because you know, Bitcoin's been doing its thing, it's been consolidating a little bit. But having said that, look at the chart now, Glenn. You know, from that dash for cash sell-off where everyone sold everything and ran for the hills, and then they turned around and said, hang on a sec, maybe it's not that bad. Maybe we should start buying things back up we just sold. We sold just before the crash. Now we're going to buy them back up at a higher level. Now they bounced than the way we sold them at, which is not the way to trade. But so Bitcoin has grinded higher, hasn't it? From that level, it went down to just below 5,000. And now just back above that 10,000 level, which seems to me, and you just said so before we came on, seems like a significant level.
Yeah, I mean, I tweeted last night, what did I remember? Let's see. I wrote, could this be it? I was so excited.
I saw the tweet, could Glenn, this be it? I saw the tweet. You know, your tweets are like Donald Trump's. You know, everyone waits for them.
So, yeah, I'm asking, could this be it? Finally, the start of the big Bitcoin breakout. And I added that chart, which shows Bitcoin trading within one enormous trading range since the high in 2018, since the beginning of the Bitcoin crash. You could draw a straight line directly down to connect all the highest high points of all the rallies that have occurred ever since then. And when you're able to form a kind of little triangle shape, because you can draw a diagonal line downwards across all the highest highs, and a diagonal line upwards across all the highest lows, and then, you know, sort of where the peaks and troughs, and basically you get a symmetrical triangle, which is not the most reliable kind of chart formation. It's symmetrical triangles, you don't know whether they're going to break out upwards or break out downwards because they're symmetrical. But basically, with this particular one, you know, I was anticipating a breakout upwards for the past kind of couple of weeks. I spoke on the podcast last week about how I was hovering over the buy button, and basically the price hovered right near that $10,000 level for about the past week. And it's, to be honest, it's been driving me slightly mad, because I felt like I couldn't quite ever step that far away from my computer. If I was on my phone, I had to keep checking it, because ideally I wanted to catch that breakout in real time and buy the exact moment of the breakout. Though overnight, just so your listeners know how I work things when I'm asleep, I would put in a buy order with a stop loss.
You do that when you're asleep? That's amazing. How do you do that when you're asleep?
I've been trading
so
long, I can do these things in my sleep now.
Do you know what? I've got to say, I went to your Twitter there, and there's the background picture of you, what they call the wallpaper, whatever it's called. You've got a picture of you in Foyles, the bookshop, and above your head is The Intelligent Investor, which calls for Benjamin Graham, which is a very famous book. And in fact, Warren Buffett, you know, was apparently, he was
Benjamin Graham's protege,
wasn't he? Yeah, that was his mentor. And he sort of adapted and evolved his strategy off that. That's right above your head. Then on the one shelf, next to that shelf, is your book, The Crypto Trader. And you seem very happy there, very smiling away, very pleased. You look genuinely very happy.
Yeah, and I'm happy. I'm in the bookshop.
That's good. But you've turned your book. I mean, have you turned your book, The Face? Was it displayed like that or not?
Yes, it was displayed like that. Yeah, I was very lucky.
Because most books, are, you know, you can see the back of the book, the what they call the back of the book, the spine of the book. But yours is full frontal. Like The Intelligent Investor is.
Mine was the newest, they turn the, apart from The Intelligent Investor, which obviously isn't the newest, but generally speaking, they like to, you know, make a bit of a show of whatever's just come out. I'd just be another spine now, wouldn't I? I'd just be one of the spine books now.
Yeah, I just like your little cherubby face there, you know, smiling away. Just, you know, can't contain. You can see your eyes are glistening. said, look, everyone, I'm in a book. That's an achievement, though. Do you know what? I've got to write a book. Just to get a book out there.
And it's in foils, exactly. So I was. Mm. That's why I was so happy. I was like, this is where the best books end up is in the best bookshop in the world. So yeah, I was very happy with myself. And as you quite rightly point out, my little cherubby face. My children say I've got little chipmunk cheeks.
Yeah.
Which I think you'd agree with there. Well, you see how the little cheeks kind of burst out.
Well, if you cut them in there, it looks as if, your cheeks are veritably full of nuts there. It's,
that's what my son says. Full of nuts.
He looks like he's full of nuts there. It looks like you've really had a good day of scavenging nuts. You're very happy with what you've got in your cheeks. And anyway, listen. Trouble with breakouts on Bitcoin, they're never really reliable, are they? I mean, it seems okay there, but like you say, it's broken up, then it's come back a little bit. It's almost like you've said to everyone, "Here's the big rock on fireworks night." Another analogy, fireworks night. Here's the big rock, and everyone, and it goes up, and then because it's. You don't hear an explosion. What's that? What happened to it?
Well, this is the problem. This is the problem with triangle patterns. Ideally, what you want, there's no kind of alchemy to it, really. I know it sounds a bit crazy when I start talking about heads and shoulders and all of that kind of thing. But ultimately, what we're talking about is support. Ultimately, what we're talking about is support and resistance levels. Yeah. That's really all it's about. And ideally, you want those to be horizontal lines because those are the most reliable support and resistance levels. If you can draw a nice horizontal line across the tops of all the highest highs that a chart has reached, a price has reached in the past, several weeks or several months, and you can draw a nice horizontal line across the top of it, that usually represents a great breakout level. When the price eventually does break out from a horizontal formation like that, it tends to break out with strength and conviction, and it's a great place to buy in my experience. Well, in a lot of professional traders' experience. But when you look at a downward sloping, a diagonal line, like the one that we've got going from the top of Bitcoin's price range at $20,000 a couple of years ago, all the way down to the $10,000 that we're at now, it's a diagonal sloping line, less reliable. The breakouts tend to be a little bit more hit and miss, certainly. But it did break out with a certain amount of conviction last night. As I say, is about $6,000 rise over the past 24 hours or so, which is, that's about 6%. Not bad. And yet it has stalled for the time being. Basically, it stalled just below the previous high, which was in February, just before the big crash. And what you want to see is the price break through that previous high, because then what you've done is, you've got a pattern at the moment where for the past few years, the price has been, it got to 20,000 and then it crashed down. And then it got back up, but not to 20,000, only to about 14,000. And then it crashed back down. And then it got up to like 11,000. So, you had lower highs each time. And now if the price can beat the previous lower high, if you see what I mean, at about $10,500, then you've broken that long downward pattern. It means that Bitcoin would no longer be in a long-term bear market, which is pretty significant. But we're just a squeak away from that confirmation. If we get that, then that will encourage a lot more traders to think, oh, maybe this is a new bull market, a proper bull market, and that will encourage people to buy. That's how it tends to work anyway.
Okay, well, so basically you're long, yeah?
I am long, yes. I bought at the point of breakout. Luckily, it happened.
I don't mean you're long yourself. I don't know how long you are. You're not a tall chap, are you?
I'm not a tall chap, no.
Well,
I think it's fair to say.
That fits in with the little squirrel sort of.
It does, yes, the whole image. I'm a little guy with little chipmunk cheeks. My son actually sometimes chipmunk. Says I look like, he says I look like one of those garden gnomes that you, that have a fishing rod and, sit at the end of your garden.
Hang on, how tall is your son then?
Yeah, exactly.
He's having a go at you, isn't he? He's going to call the chipmunk and the thing. So hang on. I'm taller than you. Well, I don't know how tall your son is, but there we are.
Exactly. I tower over him. Who does he think he is?
Okay, so stop loss level. Well, where are you placed it? If it doesn't...
I placed my stop loss at my breakout level, which is, where did I buy it? I bought it at about 9.7. 9.7. And... No, I bought it at 9.7, yeah. And no, lower than that, just slightly lower. 9.673 looks, yeah, that was my entry point. And my stop loss is at about the same level. So that, you know, worst came to the worst, I would break even. I mean, normally I like to raise the stop loss level a little bit so that at least I can lock in some profit if the worst comes to the worst and the price retraces all the way. But with this one, you know, I want to give it some room to jiggle up and down, as prices tend to do. And, you know, there's volatility around. I want to give it a chance to go down and not break through my stop loss if possible. So that's where I've placed my stop loss, at the break-even level for the time being. But if the price starts rising again and goes up to a much higher level, then I may raise my stop loss, or I may raise my stop loss for part of my position, for example. That's something I like to do quite a lot, is say raise the stop loss level for half the position, so that if there's a lot of jiggling about and correcting of the price and so on, then I only get stopped out on half of my position, and therefore I'm taking the profit on that chunk, and then I let the rest of it run indefinitely.
Yeah. So what's behind this breakout level? Is it the chaos in America or anything like that? Because that is...
Well, someone commented on my tweet that was, you know, what did he say? One of the guys who commented on my tweet said it only took martial effing law, apparently, to cause the breakout. And that's, I mean, because it was just after Trump's speech where he said, I'll do whatever it takes kind of thing. I'm going to deploy the military if state officials fail to quell the protests. I don't know if that was connected to the price rise, to be perfectly honest with you, because as I've said, the price has been bouncing really close to that breakout level for about the past, let's have a look, since the 8th of May. So best part of a month, the price has been bouncing really, really close to that breakout line. So I'm not going to put it all down to Donald Trump. Maybe he lit the fuse, if you'll pardon the unpleasant analogy. Yeah, but, you know, he said his thing and the price suddenly broke out. Would it have broken out anyway? That's debatable. Who knows?
So listen, that guy, I can't think of his name now, but it's Dr. Flow Model guy. Is he still claiming it's within the model range? Because it seems to me, no matter what happens, it's within the guidelines of the model. Is that still going on or not?
Yes, he believes it is still within the guidelines of the model. He tweeted recently. I'm not a huge fan of the Stop to Flow model, because I investigated it for, you know, with a university statistician, a statistics professor, not professor, statistics lecturer at university. We investigated, you know, whether there is statistical validity to his model. The conclusion was my lecturer guy was not impressed with it particularly, and once he'd explained it to me in terms that I could just about understand, then neither was I particularly impressed either.
Yeah,
well, it's a nice model, but it doesn't really prove anything.
No, my thing is this, and I liked it, and I liked the sound of it, and I looked into it, and I thought, hang on, and I thought about gold, and it's hard to compare gold. Gold is a lot less liquid, you know? People don't just, when Bitcoin is a very liquid, speculative asset, you can just trade straight away. If you have a dip in price, you can sell it straight away, and that's why it has these massive ups and downs. Whereas gold, you know, most people, half the world gold is in jewellery. Now, people don't go and rush and sell their jewellery, their gold jewellery, if the gold price dips by like 20% or whatever, but it doesn't dip by 20%. And that's why the share price of gold, the price of gold isn't as volatile, because, you know, people are not buying and selling it just on the price of gold. That's it. You know, people just have it. People who have gold don't even think about the price of it. They've got on their fingers, their rings, their jewellery, heirlooms and all that stuff. They don't care. It's pretty much the day-to-day trading price of gold. Whereas people who hold Bitcoin do very much care about the price, the trading day-to-day price of. That's why it's bought and sold so quickly. So,
indeed.
So that,
which is why the stock-to-flow model. I mean, that's one of the many reasons why the stock-to-flow model is fundamentally flawed. Because the idea that you know, there's a tiny amount of new Bitcoin being created each day. It trickles out, and the idea was that every time there's a halving, like the one a few weeks ago. You only get one every 4 years, and the halving means that the amount of new Bitcoin that is mined, that trickles out, is is half as much as it was before. So there's now a tiny new amount of new Bitcoin being created each day. But to be honest, even before the halving, there was a relatively tiny amount of new Bitcoin being created each day. And as you quite rightly point out, there isn't really a massive floor to the price of Bitcoin in the way that there is with gold, because people don't, as you say, people aren't so kind of attached to Bitcoin that they keep it, whatever the price is, in the way that they do with gold jewelry and so on. And so the idea that the tiny new amount of new Bitcoin each day, that a change in that amount is going to dramatically change the whole dynamic of the demand and supply in the market for Bitcoin, I think is a bit silly, to be honest, because that you can get such dramatic changes in the demand for Bitcoin each day, depending on whether people are excited about it or not, that it completely swamps any effect that might be given by the tiny new amount of brand new Bitcoin that's created each day. It's relatively insignificant. That's the main point.
Yeah, and I think if you want to check if the model's still valid, ask Plan B and he'll say, yes, it is.
It
that's,
is.
That's well, it. You know, it comes down to that. It's his model, pretty much, and no, it's still within the guidelines. Doesn't matter how much. So it dipped, literally. We've seen it now. I don't know what its price was. Its target was, but it dipped from 10,000. Well, let's be honest, 19,000, 20,000 to 5,000 or 3,000. That's still within the model, still within the range. It's like, yeah. Really?
It's, the model covers quite a lot of eventualities.
It does. It seems like there's an unbreakable model, which is fantastic, which is good for him, because and the Bitcoin bugs, because they believe it's going to the moon anyway. So it doesn't matter what level this goes to. That's within the range. That's within the range.
That's within the range.
Don't worry.
But what else have we got? We've got a good story now underlying Bitcoin, which is the one we've mentioned weeks now, which is, you know, the money printing in the US, and not just the money printing, but the economic crisis, particularly in the United States. And now we have a political crisis as well, with all the rioting on the streets and the protests. Mm-hmm. So with all of that in mind, it makes people start looking to alternatives. You know, well, if the... Maybe the dollar's not safe. I mean, you know, the dollar is still strong, though it has been falling quite heavily over the past week or so. And I've got some short dollar trades on, which are doing very well for me, you know, shorting the dollar against other currencies. And that's been going very well. I'm not convinced that the dollar's going to collapse or anything like that, but clearly people are sensible in seeing it as not such a safe place for their money as they did before. You know, you can't really consider the dollar as rock solid safe when there are so many people rioting and looting on the streets in the country that owns the dollar. So it's natural that people should seek out alternatives, and a lot of people like Bitcoin and a lot of people like gold, because those are harder currencies that can't be depreciated by endless money printing like the US is doing, like they're doing in Europe, like the Bank of England. You know, there's a strong story behind it, which might be the reason why we appear, I say tentatively, to be entering into a new bull market for Bitcoin.
Okay, all right. Anything else, Glenn, on the Bitcoinage stuff? Or any thoughts, any observations?
Well, JP Morgan is worth mentioning. I read a new secret report, which I got access to secretly, from JP Morgan, like a kind of insider's report, about what they think about the future of cryptocurrencies and digital, and also central bank digital currencies, you know, the ones like the one that China is making and so on. And they were actually striking a pretty kind of positive note about it. And they were also warning that the dollar is not necessarily in danger, but there is a threat to the dollar from the likes of China and so on inventing their own central bank digital currencies. There's no kind of getting away from that. And as a result, you know, they think that people need to look at all sides of the monetary debate and take central bank digital currencies a lot more seriously than they are at the moment. They go into a lot of depth about that.
Is that what they say? Take them more seriously, please. Please take them more seriously. Listen, you lot. We're a bank, John, Peter, Morgan Bank, and we just want to take them a bit more seriously. Yeah? I mean, we notice people laughing. Whenever we mention digital currencies, there's a titter at the back there. People are giggling. Just take it more seriously, okay? That's all we're saying.
Yeah. Oh, also, there are reports that JP Morgan is softening on the idea of Bitcoin and other kind of digital currencies, not the central bank versions, the open ones like Bitcoin.
That's why you want to take it more seriously, because they are. Right, listen, we're investing in it now, so take it more seriously, okay? We were laughing. we were at the back of the class with the guys laughing at the start, but now we think we should pay more attention to the teacher here, because she's saying something because we're invested. Yeah,
there is a degree of that perhaps going on. Yeah, very importantly, they've struck up a relationship with Coinbase, which is one of the biggest Bitcoin sellers in the world, and also with the rival Bitcoin exchange Gemini. So they've now got they've now allowed those two to have accounts with JP Morgan, which is very important because Coinbase has struggled in the past with trying to have bank accounts stable. Banking relationships, because all the banks are so nervous about dealing with any company that deals in Bitcoin, and so they kept kind of having on-off relationships banking-wise. This is pretty significant that JP Morgan have given their accounts the seal of approval.
It's got to head that way, isn't it? Really, to be honest, I just think, you know, it's like I said, when you see Bitcoin being the best performing asset, in inverted commas. Then, you know, if you're an investor, an institutional investor, you've got to have a bit of Bitcoin because it's outperformed every other investment you've had asset-wise.
Over the past decade.
So they can't. If you want to be ahead of the crowd, or you know, you want to outperform your peers, you've got to have a chunk of the best performing asset. So they've got to take it seriously. That's why, you know. Are they the biggest bank in America? Which is the biggest bank in America then? Let's have a look.
At the moment, is it JP Morgan?
JP Morgan Chase, it is them, yeah, sorry. So it's JP Morgan, it's $2.6 trillion in assets, and it's Bank of America, Citigroup, Wells Fargo. Okay, where's Goldman Sachs then? Goldman Sachs are like. Goldman Sachs are fifth.
No, not quite as big as they were at the moment.
They're fifth.
Oh, they're fifth.
Morgan Stanley.
Out of interest, what are the top five then? JP Morgan.
JP Morgan, Bank of America, one. Citigroup third. So Bank of America second, Citigroup third, Wells Fargo fourth. Goldman Sachs fifth, Morgan Stanley sixth, and US Bancorp, well, seven, it didn't matter for them. But Morgan, there's a lot of Morgans in there. Morgan Stanley, JP Morgan, Morgan. I used to know a boy in school was called Morgan.
Was that really? Yeah, is that true, or did you just make that
true,
up?
True. That was his first and second name. His surname was Morgan. Morgan. It was like a Welsh farmer thing. I don't know what's going on there. But Morgan. Good Morgan. How are you today? Anyway, he's done very well in banking. He went into banking.
Yeah.
And he owns Morgan Stanley and JP Morgan. He's the Morgan in that. So there we are. He didn't get on with Stanley, so he set up, Morgan Chase. Right, anyway. Thanks for that, Glenn. That's good stuff. And he's long Bitcoin, but short physically in stature.
Indeed. But just to say at the end then, what I'm looking out for, another breakout from the level that we're at now. As I say, my stop loss is just below the initial breakout level, so I'm allowing the price room to move about somewhat. But hopefully this is just a little minor correction we've seen over the last 9 hours or so since the big rise, and hopefully it'll be followed up by another one. If it's followed up by another big rise, then I'm going to be a lot more convinced that we really are in a new era.
Well, just ask Plan B. You know, it's all going to plan. Don't worry about that.
Yeah.
Whatever happens, it all goes to the plan. Because otherwise, he wouldn't have as many Twitter followers. Right, that's it. Thanks, that. Then speak to you next week.
Thank you.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Omega Diagnostics, down 4% to 70.5 pence. At four, Tiziana Life Sciences. Down 7.17 to 103.5. At 3, De La Rue. That's up 23% to 147. At 2, Card Factory. Down 1.5% to 40 pence. And at 1, it's Entertainment AI. 27 pence. It's not moving today. Okay, top 5. most liked or most read RNSs are as follows. At 5, it's Card Factory preliminary results for the year ended 31st of Jan. Let's have a quick look at those. Revenue up 3.6. Underlying profit before tax down 12%. Oh, so not that impressive. Why is it rallying on that? Maybe it's been sold. No, it's down 2%. Okay, it's not rallying. My fault there. My bad. At 4, Hemogenics CDX development agreement extension. At 3, Vodafone publication of 2020 annual report. At 2, Hummingbird Resources. Hummingbird Resources joined the World Gold Council. I imagine that to be quite a flash council, you know, as councils go. You know, I mean, you imagine their sort of Christmas party. Quite a flash event, do you think? Quite sparkly, quite blingy. Okay, at 1, it's Novasight. Coronavirus update. And they announced some of the updates there, the money. And they talked about, I don't know why it's down today. To be honest, they're valued at what? Let's have a look. Over 200 million? They've announced revenue of 90 million euros so far, but with orders of 120. So, yeah, you're doing on the margins. It's a trouble. But they've had some regulatory pressure in France, apparently, on their tests. They produce these COVID-19 tests. So, they're saying they can still sell the test in France for private patient testing. Anyway, that's it. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.